Welcome to the Drive Time News Blast. 30 minutes, 45 for patrons. News of the day from a perspective of truth, liberty, and justice. This is Monica Perez.
And I'm Brad Binkley.
Our top story is that, of course, as usual, the Democrats have a huge plan, a huge tax plan, a huge spending plan, and the Republicans don't really care about all the spending and all the taxes. They just like to say it's not quite right, it's not good enough, it's not what they promised, and the big whopper of all is it's not enough. So Biden has this plan. He calls it an infrastructure plan. It's got all this tax stuff in it. And the Republicans are actually coming out saying it's not really an infrastructure plan. It has a lot of other tax and spend in there. And this is just a reflection of, for me, that Trump was teeing up the whole infrastructure thing all along. Now the Republicans are fully behind it. Whereas when Obama was trying to get an infrastructure plan, it was dead in the water. There are actually state constitutions that forbid infrastructure spending because it was historically such a disaster. It's terrible. It completely changes people's decision making. The roads and bridges are not crumbling. And if they are, the states should be paying for it. However, there's a problem. Another thing Trump did, sorry, I'm not like super down on Trump, but that his tax plan made it so state and local taxes, SALT, were not tax deductible. So your state, if they decide to pay for things, you are double taxed on that money. So New York came out over the weekend and said they were going to have a $4 billion annual tax increase against corporations and high income earners. Now, every dollar that they tax used to be, it would be deducted against your federal tax rate. So if your state and local tax rate was 15% and the government tax rate, the federal, was 40% plus Social Security, you'd be well over 50%, except for that you could deduct the state against the federal. I mean, theoretically, if the federal was 50 and the state was 50, 100% of your money would go. So they take these. So when you cannot deduct state and local, it discourages the states from doing the spending, and it encourages them to go to Congress, go to Senate, and put the spending there. So the states should be paying for these tunnels and bridges and stuff, especially New York. But they can say, we really can't afford it because we had all this COVID stuff and we can't deduct state and local. I think it's all going to play together. And then a third thing that I felt was a legacy of the Trump era was that Biden is talking about taxing corporations. I personally incorporated over the past year or two, because we finally got an accountant and he said, oh, tax, Trump's tax thing, you have this little business, you should incorporate, even though it didn't amount to anything, didn't make any money ever, but you should incorporate because of the taxing. So we did. So we never did before. And now if they turn around and increase corporate taxes, a lot of people who made that decision maybe regretting it. I mean, this is a problem with having no ideology, having the cult of personality. People will follow whatever they are told from the top, even if it doesn't make long-term sense. And then it goes and gets reversed the next time. There's just far, far, far too much power at the federal level. And most of it derives from this ability to tax. The ability to tax is the ability to destroy. And then the last thing I'll say about it is, regardless of whether people made decisions based on the Trump thing, Biden himself said last year that 400,000 small businesses closed since the lockdown began. And if you're eliminating all of those small businesses, the only things that will remain are things that can, that benefit from government money. They have access to bond markets that the governments have been subsidizing. They will go along with the surveillance stuff. They'll go along with the vaccination requirements or however. It's that soft fascism. The more you put the money and the power at the corporate level, and the more you shut down mom and pops at the bottom, the more you open the door to this this backdoor fascism. I feel like it's all coming together. Yeah. And I know people say, And it's worse with Biden. Of course, it is totally, totally worse with Biden. I'm not suggesting it isn't. But a lot of this stuff would have been better served if you had like a Ron Paul type ideological stalwart in there for 4 years, educating people as to the ideological basis for policy positions. Instead, it was an us versus them thing. And the danger in that, which I've always said, is you're going to be on the other side of that pretty soon. And I mean, I feel like a lot of these things were already teed up, and we don't have the right, not that I'm on the right, but does not have the moral high ground anymore.
No, I don't think anybody in Washington has the moral high ground. I think everybody's competing to have the moral low ground. So that the high ground is about as low as the bar can be. But when it comes to those local businesses being closed, I saw a story over the weekend about how lesbian bars are pretty much gone. That was a haven, a place where people could go to feel safe. And because these aren't big corporations, these are small local businesses, they have just been decimated by the pandemic. So the very groups that a lot of these policies and advocates claim they're trying to fight for, they're destroying their businesses as well.
It's funny because I was saying for a while, this World Economic Forum thing has always been, they always say, and if you look at the Rockefeller Foundation kind of mission statement, they always say that they're there for the poor, they're there for the disenfranchised, they're there for the people of color. And I used to just think it was an excuse, but now I think it's actually the opposite, that they continue to exploit and oppress, and ultimately it'll be a form of kind of neo-colonialism when they institute some of that stuff Alison McDowell was talking about. And then what's funny is they had the right versus right dialectic. So I said, well, I'm not on the right. I'm a libertarian that used to kind of be squarely on the right. They had the Tea Party came out of that. They call Ron Paul the intellectual godfather. But the right was hijacked by these neoconservatives in the 80s, where all of a sudden they forgot all about the fact that rights came from God or whatever, not from the government. And they would introduce this concept of American exceptionalism, where they could go bomb other countries, but it wouldn't be okay for another country to bomb us under the same circumstances. There was a big, genuine schism in the Republican on the right, I would say, between the ideologists and or ideologues and the people who wanted power. You should read my Neoconservatism, the Autobiography of an Idea. It's a review I made of the Irving Kristol book. It's on monicapareso.com. But then they brought that, and I think it was kind of artificial, they brought that to the left. So this today, I woke up to headlines saying Ilhan Omar clashes with Stacey Abrams in calling for boycotts over Georgia law, Georgia voting law. And I was been kind of puzzling over that, because it seems to me that Stacey Abrams is getting, as the person without a political position, as the like perennial loser, but the person with supposed moral high ground, she gets to say, don't do the boycott because it will help. It will hurt us, like the lesbian bars. I wouldn't be surprised if that article was placed as a kind of under the subconscious support for Stacey Abrams. You know, she digs beneath the surface a little bit. Like, I kind of get that sense from these stories that are coming out that feature her clashing with others on the left.
Clashing is a bit of an exaggeration, I would say, because I saw the interview that Omar did, and I saw Abrams' statements. Abrams, first of all, and you pointed this out last week, she said, don't boycott yet. And also, when it came to the Braves thing, or not the Braves thing, the All-Star game being taken out of Atlanta, she didn't condemn, really. She actually praised like the bravery of everything, but just commented on how it is going to hurt the workers, which it will, people who work in the stadium. So she's playing both sides of that. And Omar clashing, her angle is, one of the things going on is giving Abrams that competition, that clash, looking like she's battling people in her own party. And this is a common theme that she says she used in the past in her campaigns, and she will use in the future. Look, I fight against people in my own party, even when it means I'm standing up for something important. So she's going to have that to use in the future. And also, Omar is pushing the idea of these boycotts being effective, and how historically she says they were effective, and she wants the boycotts to continue, and she wants them to prevent this legislation from happening in all the other states, unlike they were able to prevent them from happening in Georgia. She wishes they would have done them sooner.
And what about the What was the response to the All-Star game being moved? I feel like there was a lot of that in the
There was a couple responses. The first one was the Braves came out with their response, and they basically said they were disappointed in it. This was not their decision, and that it takes away an opportunity for people working, the fans, the team, and that they're bummed out by it. But then they went on to say they continue to stand up and fight for equal voting rights and whatnot. So they made that obligatory statement that they have to make. Honestly, I thought their statement was perfectly fine that in that environment. I would have liked for them to say F you, this is fascism, but that's not going to happen. So the coordinated response from the top down, I see all these opinion pieces across every platform that's saying Braves whiffed on their response to the pulling out of the All-Star game. Whiffed. And this is not an opinion piece when it's the same message everybody else is delivering. It's so obviously coordinated. It's stupid. So Kemp's response was to come out, and Kemp can act like he's a Republican again, like you said. He can act like he's fighting. Yeah. So now he's on the good side of the right now. And he was on Fox News doing an interview. And during that interview, he said many things. But one of the things he said was that companies like Delta are going to have to answer to their shareholders. And I said, no, they're not, because this has nothing to do with shareholders. This has everything to do with stakeholders, stakeholder capitalism, which is the foundation of the Great Reset. And I can tell you what the stakeholder capitalism is from the Great Reset's website. It's a form of capitalism in which companies are serving long-term value creation by taking into account the needs of all of their stakeholders and society at large. It's a global economy that works for progress, people, and planet. And it is something they use is called the Environmental Social Governance Standards, where they judge how companies use equality initiatives, race initiatives. So everything we're seeing falls in line with stakeholder capitalism. And I think that term was used purposely, almost as like a, I don't know, it's really strange the way he said that, because this has
He's
nothing to do with
it up. He's teeing it up to a rebuttal. There's going to be a rebuttal against him saying shareholders aren't the only ones who matter. That's a passé concept. Yeah. And I'll tell you why it's a passé concept. It is because of exactly what Biden said. 400,000 companies lost their businesses, or small businesses lost their companies over the past year from lockdown. The only way that you can favor stakeholders over shareholders is if you can't get pure play competition. So when I was learning about finance, what you want is, you don't even want conglomerates. You don't want aggregate companies. You want everybody to be able to value each segment of a business independently. So you have just an iron ore company versus another iron ore company. And then you can say, okay, we can actually drill down to which one is better managed and make our choice. And then the one that's more poorly managed, they will get their act together. But as you put on regulatory barriers to entry, where they also need an accounting department, an OSHA department, they need legal department, then you start getting to where they will consolidate stuff and you cannot access that pure play. So that company has an advantage. And if you then go through and eliminate other companies based on other things like COVID compliance, or not having the run rate, the runway to endure, then all of a sudden you have these companies that have no competition, and then the shareholders have no place else to go. If you want any exposure to retail, you've got to buy Target. And there's a big problem with that. Plus, like, your 401ks and stuff only access, or generally access, public companies. So the more that gets weeded out, the more the shareholder, and let me just tell you something, the shareholder is me. I buy a $20 share and I feel like I don't have to be the laborer. I don't have to be the person who suffers from inflation. I can participate in some small way in capitalism. It's a great system. But if I want to participate in capitalism, now I have to support a political agenda that I'm not crazy about. So that is a big problem with a stakeholder. And you don't have choices. You don't have the power to favor one. What if you don't like that Target tells your local government how to legislate. I mean, these things, these are pieces of legislation that are getting passed through a representative democracy. That means that the majority of the voters, or at least the perception of the politicians, is that the majority of the voters want one thing over another. And if you're saying that it is objectively wrong to make that majority choice, where is your morality coming from? That's a big question. And you could literally walk away from those stocks because stakeholder over shareholder is going to make a less well-returning stock. And it's kind of like a self-correcting thing. But because they've stepped in and they've created these kind of monopolies or oligopolies artificially, they now have the power of fascism. And then just like European government, when I marched against Obamacare and there were Europeans on the subway saying, what are you doing? And I said, well, unlike your people who are marching for the government to give them handouts because they have no other way of asserting their preferences, we are begging our government not to do it, not to redistribute wealth in this way, not to, quote, give us free healthcare, because we don't want the only way for ourselves to get recognition to beg the overlords to give it, to prefer us. That's all politics. Whereas if you have shares, if you have freedom, if you have choice, you can just vote with your feet. Every purchase is a vote. And I mean, I could not object more to this premise. And I totally think it's disingenuous. I think they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, get ready, because nearly 200 companies, corporations, speaking out against the voter law changes in Georgia and the proposed changes in Texas have signed a statement, and they don't like it, and they're coming out against it, and this is where it's going next. The activists, what they want these corporations to do, they want them to lobby senators about passing the currently pending legislation to stop them, to get them to not do it. They want them to lobby just as aggressively as these corporations would lobby for their own corporate interest, and they want them to cut off all funding to anybody who supports any of this voter suppression laws that they're presenting. And Texas is the next state that they're going to be targeting. And they established Atlanta, and not Atlanta, Georgia. And I think what they're doing there is, you know, did I say this already about establishing the baseline? I think they're using the Georgia laws as a stab, because there's nothing racist about the Georgia laws. They're just not. They actually allow for more time to vote, and they requiring an ID. There's nothing racist about that. It's ridiculous to claim so. And the people who are propagating that know that. But I think they're establishing Georgia as a baseline example of what racist voter suppression is. And that baseline is being not racist at all. They're trying to make it look racist, control the narrative. And that way, when they go to all these other states and they can say, wow, look, Georgia's not half as bad as this racist state. We definitely can't allow corporations. You saw what happened in Georgia, and this is worse. You better step up now. I think that's what's going on. I think we're getting the baseline so that it's easier to stop it in other states.
I think that makes sense. And I remember a caller many years ago, I never even thought of this, and boy, is it true. I mean, I picked up on it as soon as she said it, but that immigration people are all focused on this international immigration. Think about state-to-state migration and how that is going to affect your culture and your voting and all that. And so shortly thereafter, she probably was ahead of it. I was kind of new to Atlanta at that time. The Hollywood effect really changed the demographic in Georgia. I couldn't imagine Georgia going blue. Absolutely not. Outside the loop, no way. And now in Texas, then I was savvy to it. So when I saw it happening in LA and I saw it happening in New York, and now this $4.3 billion tax increase proposal in New York, and LA is going to have the same thing, California, they're driving people from blue states. They are not, those people are not going to leave their politics behind. They're proud and selfish, in my opinion, and they're going to go tip the scales in Texas. And Texas already has a great deal of Hispanic immigration from south of the border. A lot of those people are Catholic. You can't make it it's not an easy transition, but they have not been educated with this American experiment of liberty. And that's why we have prosperity. They just think we're richer because we steal and they want some of the goodies. You know, I'm not saying that's like the Catholic thing, but I'm just saying they don't understand. A lot of people, even maybe the blue people from LA and New York, don't understand the origin of prosperity. In Texas, it's easy to make the argument that like oil did it. So, I mean, it gets nuanced, but without ideology. I mean, that's why I get bummed about Trump. It's like that, you know, we had this opportunity when people were really disgruntled to restore ideology. And instead it was, you know, identity was doubled down upon.
Yes, this is weaponized identity politics for sure. And Georgia and Texas have been the center of it all for the past year. Charles Barkley, who, you know, he comes out and he says stuff sometimes and he's right on the money. And I think that's the case here. He, during the Final Four, I think it was halftime, they were talking and the subject of racism came up. And Barkley said that he believes that most white people and black people are great people. He believes that in his heart. And he said that the system is set up to where politicians, whether they are Republicans or Democrats, the system set up and designed to make us not like each other so that these politicians can keep their grasp on money and power. He said it's a divide and conquer tactic. And any voters who follow these politicians who spend their career exploiting the differences in people, he said, you're stupid if you do that. And he's right. Everything he says, right? And then, of course, the very predictable thing happens on social media, and that is, Charles Barkley, you shut up, you stupid Uncle Tom. That's the response on social media.
Boy, he can't take that laying down. That guy has got absolutely backbone.
Yeah, I don't know what his response to that is.
I'm sure he has enough money. If they want to cancel him, he's like, I don't care. I'm sure he won't compromise. Care. He does. I mean, I remember him saying, I believe it was him, who said, like, I don't care if you're a racist unless it means that you're bringing that to the economy by deciding who you can hire, who you can't hire. And I understand drawing that line, having this idea that the public marketplace is the same thing as a public space, but it's really not. And similar to stakeholders versus shareholders, if you have a small business who's going to discriminate on the basis of color, like segregation only works because there were laws. Otherwise, you would have a coffee shop that would open up next to a segregated coffee shop and let the market decide. So the discrimination does not pay. Hiring somebody and trying to screw her all the time, she's going to go to the next place unless you pay her more. And that's going to drive you out of business. So, I mean, it just doesn't work. The free market is an answer to this stuff.
Yes, it is. And in our last story of the Free 30, we're going to talk about why Rita Wilson and Tom Hanks haven't gotten the jab yet and why Monica thinks that their explanation is a bunch of bull. But before we get to that, I want to tell you a little bit about what's going to be in the Patron 15, which is an inspirational story about a guy who went from being a crackhead to number one best-selling author before his book was even released. And we're going to talk about a cow that wreaked havoc on a major highway.
It wasn't a cow.
Well, that's not what all the stories say.
That is true.
And, of course, a big thanks to our sponsor of today's show. Monica, I'm going to throw that to you because you do
exceptional. Oh, yeah, because I love it. So you heard, we talked about this on Friday. You're only throwing it to me because you can't say his name.
That's partially true, yes.
Etienne de la Boetie Squared. And I also love the original Etienne de la Boetie, who wrote he wrote about the consent of the governed. I think it was a treatise on Discord or something, but his idea is you need the consent of the governed to really oppress them. And I think that is the intellectual basis for what Etienne, our sponsor, has done with this great book. So it's actually more than just a book. It's several books and other resources. There's
flash drives.
Yeah, you can go to the website and you can click through all the links. And what it is we've talked about it before. We actually interviewed Etienne, which was on tap before he sponsored the show. So this is it's an interesting interview. You can watch the video on Rockfin or you can listen to the audio. We put it in the Propaganda Report Drive. It's Government, the Biggest Scam in History. You can get it at government-scam.com. And it is a book that is designed for visual learners to go from 0 to 60, being fully woke to the scam that is government. I think of it as a coffee table book. Just leave it there. If somebody's coming over, let them look through it. And it, like, it, what really grabs you right away is one of the sections has four columns: East Germany, Nazi Germany, the USSR, and the US, and things that they have in common. It's not like little details. It has a lot to do with symbolism, ritual, the emotional aspect of how they present information to you. It really isn't about ideology. It's about tactics. And what this book does is very quickly, because it's visual in nature, it helps people who are persuaded by that stuff without even realizing it, because that stuff is also visual. It's highly mimetic. It's memes. See in a different way, visually, the same stuff. And it really makes the scales fall from the eyes. And he also by the end has like events coming up over the next year. You can get that through the website, government-scam.com, and other resources, things to do. I love the idea of the Free State Project in New Hampshire. You don't have to think of the same outcome or recommendation in the end game as he does. But the most important part of the book is that it is meant to wake people up, and I think it will be effective. He suggests buy 5 copies and give them to people. So I just ordered my last couple of copies, and I'm just going to give them to people. And I think it will wake people up. He loves that I love his stuff. So he put a tab in his website, government-scam.com/Monica. And if you use the code Monica10, you get 10% off everything except for like mega bulk orders. Like if you have a school and you're ordering a big box of the stuff, or he's got like kits. I don't think you get it off of that. But if you just want to do what I did, I actually did it and I used Monica 10. He was like, no, you didn't have to, but I did. I wanted to, because I think it's a good idea. Like, you can do your small part by waking a few people up. So I'm a fan. That is government.scam.com/Monica, and use the promotion code Monica10. And if you want to hear more about it, just listen to our conversation. It's in the Propaganda Report feed from this weekend.
Yeah, it's a great resource. Check it out. I have my copies now, and I've been going through it, and it's awesome. It's a fantastic idea. Also, if you haven't checked us out on Patreon yet, give us a shot at the Truth Sponge level. This is our basic level. With it, you get all of our patron exclusive content, which includes the Patron 15, where we continue the Drive Time News Blast, except we let our hair down a little bit more. We get a little bit more personal, and we go a little bit off path. You know, I think we have we lighten it up a bit sometimes in there, while also bringing some interesting stories. And all what you get is 45 minutes of commercial free content every single weekday. You also get access to our early releases, our select patron only interviews. You get to participate in our patron only mini Q&As, and you get direct access to Monica and I, as well as the entire patron community. And I have to tell you, it's a fantastic, very engaged and active patron community. A lot of great resources and great people in there, and all of this for just $7 a month. And you can cancel at any time. So give it a shot for a month. Check it out. See how you feel about it. See what you think. And if you don't like it, then you can cancel it. If not, you can stick around. That's Propaganda Report Patron, True Sponge Level, patron.com/Propaganda Report. Check it out. And now on to our final story of the Free 30.
So I had a story last week, but I didn't really know what to make of it. But now another weird story came out on the same topic. So Let me tell you the latest, and then I'll tell you the one before that. So Rita Wilson came out. That's Tom Hanks's wife. And she said, I want to tell everybody why we have not yet gotten the vaccine. Now, I don't really understand why we would know or have to know. They could have gotten a fake one. They had it. Now, maybe she's out there saying that they didn't get it yet. And what's the reason? Because like me, I thought, well, if they had it, and they tested positive for the antibodies, maybe they're going to wait on getting the vaccine until those antibodies go away. But no, that's not why. What she said why she and Tom did not get the vaccine is that they're too young She said, I haven't been too young for anything in the longest time, but we have to wait for the older people. Now, I believe they live in L.A., if I'm not mistaken. And I know a 17-year-old who just went to get it because they can't get rid of these things.
Yeah, I'm not buying that explanation at all. How old is Rita Wilson anyway?
60? I don't know. Well, she mustn't be 65. I think that's what her claim was, that they have to be over 60. I mean, anyway, I mean, I was watching Tom Hanks on that Bosom Buddies where he was a crossdresser. Do you remember that? He made his first
I don't think I've seen that one.
I always thought that was funny. Somebody said like maybe it was a predictive programming.
Okay, yeah. Tom Hanks is 64 years old.
Yeah, okay. Because I used to watch that as a kid.
I'm calling
they're just,
as well.
Just too young. So, but here's the thing. So this is what
She's
I'm trying to figure out.
She's also 64, yeah.
All right, so this is like, yeah, there's no chance they can't. And of course, they're waiting their turn. Like, unlike Andrew Cuomo is mired in scandal for getting Chris Cuomo the much coveted test. He tested him earlier than everybody else. It's like, at this point, I can practically see the psychologists, the industrial psychologists, or whatever you call them, sitting around thinking of like, what is the easiest way to get people ginned up for the vaccine? And it's like a sense of scarcity. I mean, it's so blatant.
It is. It's blatant.
What's a little harder for me to understand is this. It's kind of like the Ilhan Omar, Stacey Abrams thing, this dialectic within a dialectic, is that Tom Hanks' son makes the news. Now, you've said before that he's a little bit off kilter. He's a rapper. What's the story? He talks like he's inner city dude. He's Eminem or what?
Yeah, a little. Eminem's kind of a good way to describe him, but he also does some weird, like he'll just start talking in a weird dialectic, which is he does stuff on the red carpet that when I was taking improv classes, we might go do at a mall where it's like, all right, take on this character and use this dialectic. Or not dialectic, just dialect. So you try to get better at it in a real world atmosphere. But he kind of does that stuff. And he's, I don't know if it's Cajun or French or what he tries to do. But if you've never seen him before, Eminem's a good way to put it. I can't imagine Tom Hanks ever having a conversation with this person. It's just so, he just seems so vastly different. And maybe it's all phony. I don't know, but
well, I don't know that it's phony. I mean, they definitely sacrificed. Didn't we talk about this? Like the Hinckleys were friends of the Bushes. I mean, that you can. And Hinckley was the one who shot Reagan, but he was supposedly a little mentally ill. That's why he's not in jail still. Pretty hard to shoot a president and kill somebody. So the guy, Brady, was it, who was shot in the head? Ultimately, he died 20 years later, but it was considered then murder. Hinckley then was considered to have murdered that guy, and he's out living with his mom. So it's definitely a sketchy story, but the idea is it is not past the power elite, the people in this club, to sacrifice the weaker of their children to the cause. And this guy definitely seems a little weak in the head because
Totally.
His line of clothing was literally old German script font is called White Boy Summer. And now he says he's also introducing a line called Black Queen Summer or whatever, but I'm just not buying it. Anyway, it was very funny though, because the articles were about how the font of this ridiculous line of clothing was so close to what the Nazis use. And I'm trying to think, like, what did I don't know what the Nazis use. So I looked it up and I was like, wait, isn't that what the New York Times uses? Is it similar? It's not the exact, it's not the New York Times font, but it's all like a little too much. It's a little too much, especially coming from the deep state itself, Tom Hanks. I don't get it.
He did make a video also. I guess he was introducing the clothesline. He said, I think it's going to be a white boy summer, y'all. And there's nothing racist about it. He's not racist. He said he got in trouble a few years ago for saying the N-word in a rap video, and his whole position was, well, it's anybody, it's just a word. It doesn't mean whatever. And he very much comes off as a kid who has millions of dollars and doesn't have many consequences. I don't think he's racist in the least bit. And there was an article where the headline was like, Tom Hanks has three other kids, and they're all perfectly normal.
Yeah, I saw that article too. Well, he says that he just said that thing about the, he said it's about to be a, I just got a feeling, man, that this summer it's about to be a white boy summer.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's what gave him the inspiration for the thing. I find that a little bit hard to take. And he said, take it how you want. I'm not talking about Trump, NASCAR type white. I'm talking about me, rappers, John B., Jack Harlow type white boys. You know what I mean. Let me know if you guys can vibe with that and get ready because I am. And then he says, it's not me having any ill will or prejudice towards anybody from a different background, race, walk of life. And then he goes on a couple of days later to say he's launching a range of Black Queen summer merchandise. And he hopes that white boys and Black Queens can wear each other's clothes. So
he likes Black chicks. So I believe that aspect of it.
Yeah. No, I don't necessarily think that it's racist. I just think it's a rich kid
who can get away with it.
Yeah, you couldn't get away with it. But like you would think Tom Hanks would be like, hey, I'm cutting off the money if you do not stop this crap.
Perhaps there's something people haven't considered. Perhaps Tom Hanks isn't a great father.
Yeah, but he might want to protect his brand, which, I mean, I think, are we in agreement that he is at the very least, a CIA cooperator, if not a full-on...
Yes.
So whatever it is that... I mean, I think they tell you, hey, get that kid in line if they want that kid in line.
Yeah, he's the Hunter Biden of the Hanks family.
Yeah, so. I can't imagine that Hunter Biden's wheels flying off was on purpose. I think they're have so much power that they can make it work. Although... I'll tell you, the underage stuff with them and the hair smelling and stuff will play into Q. That is true. I got some shout outs.
Let's go for it.
We have a couple of new patrons. Thank you very much, Wayne and Matt, for supporting the show. Anyone else can do that too at patreon.com/propagandareport. And also, Spirit of Resistance has a shout out. So, and if you are patron saints, you too get a shout out. Wayne, you should send me your shout out. You can message me on Patreon. I check my messages from patrons every day. So, Spirit of Resistance wants to use his shout out to shout out the Biting the Bullet guys. The hosts of the Biting the Bullet podcast, Luke and Typo, are two Marine vets with a knack for being anti-government. Biting the Bullet is their outlet to reach more vets and to turn them towards the dark side against American imperialism. I'll tell you, the podcasts I've listened to of vets who the scales have fallen from their eyes, nothing is as compelling as that. So I'm actually eager to listen to Biting the Bullet. And shout out to Biting the Bullet. Spirit of Resistance says it, we can do it too. And with that, let us get on with some funny and deeper stuff in the Patreon 15.
All right. You guys can find your Drive Time News Blast every weekday afternoon at thepropreport.com or your favorite podcasting platform with the Propaganda Report podcast feed. If you want access to that extra content I was telling you about, go to patreon.com/propagandareport and become a patron. You can also check us out at rockfin.com/propagandareport. We will talk to y'all tomorrow or in the Patreon 15. Have a fantastic rest of your day. Happy belated Easter.
Yes, happy Easter. I have a little Easter story for Patreon 15.